Hello there. Welcome to this episode of Force Ghost Conversations. This is your host, Anthony King, and this week, along with special guest Caitlin from Sky Talkers, we discuss the 8th episode from Ahsoka titled The Jedi, The Witch, and The Warlord. Before we get started, I'm inviting you to join the conversation with us. We can be found on Twitter and Hive at Force Ghost Pod. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok just by searching Force Ghost Conversations. Also, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on your listening side of choice. Plus, Force Ghost Conversations is live on Patreon. If you're a fan of the podcast and would like to consider pledging your support, there'll be a link in the episode description for you to check out the various tiers offered. Finally, please be sure to check out our TeePublic store to buy some Force Ghost Conversations merchandise. And without further ado, it's time to gather around the campfire for some Force Ghost Conversations. All right, everybody, welcome back to Force Ghost Conversations, and boy, do we have a wonderful episode for you in store here today. It is a pleasure to welcome first-time guest to the show, Caitlin, co-host of the wonderful podcast Sky Talkers, a great podcast where her and her friend Charlotte break down all things related to Star Wars in great detail. Really appreciate the work that they do. It's such an inspiration for us here at Force Ghost Conversations. So be sure to check out their podcast after listening to this episode, of course, if you're not already a subscriber to their work. Obviously, I think I've noted for the last couple of weeks here that these are pre-recorded episodes due to the holiday season and just not wanting to lug around my equipment back and forth for where we're going to be at and all that stuff. Plus, it's tough to, get guests on for these pivotal episodes of Ahsoka that we wanted to during this time when everyone else is also busy too. So there is no Cloud City Gossip this week. Again, in our upcoming episodes, I will do my best to compile all the news that may have come out. But generally, again, during this time frame, there isn't a whole lot of new stuff that comes out because everyone else is also on a holiday break to some degree, and just the general news cycle slows down for the Lucasfilm, Star Wars, Willow, Indiana Jones of it all. So once we have some more news to report and we're on a regular recording schedule weekly, we will be back on that train for sure. And I frankly don't want to hold up going to our next conversation here. So, I hope you all had a wonderful holiday season. Thank you so much for listening to Force Ghost Conversations and for being a part of us along this major ride here for over 2 years now. And I just can't thank you all enough for listening and for listening to these Ahsoka episodes of the past 8 weeks here. It's been a really great fun ride. And we're going to continue some of these conversations moving forward. So get ready for all of that in the new year as well. But we've got a whole ton of other things to be excited about and looking forward to, which I'm looking at my whiteboard right now of upcoming episodes, but we'll get to those at a later date and time. I think we're all ready for the main event here. Bringing in a Jedi Master in her own right, Caitlin from Sky Talkers, to chat about Ahsoka Episode 8, the season finale, the series finale. We'll discuss all that stuff on the other side of the short break here. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. All right, everybody, welcome back to Force Ghost Conversations, and boy, what an episode of Ahsoka we have to discuss today. The season finale? The series finale? I don't know. There's a lot of conversation to be had here, and for such an incredible episode, I had to call in some big guns here to talk about this one. Of course, I am thrilled to welcome to the show for the first time Caitlin from Sky Talkers. Caitlin, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to be here. I'm so excited to talk about Ahsoka. Since it was coming out, during the strike, it feels like I haven't been able to talk about it enough. So I'm really excited that we get to talk about it today.
Yeah, I second that sentiment so much. And that's frankly where I want to start here, is because I know you all did your recordings as it was coming out, but then released them when the strike was over. And, basically, I just want to kind of get your thoughts now that it's been some time since that. And I'm sure you probably revisited in advance of this podcast or just have revisited the show in the interim since then. But I want to think, just ask you, what were your original thoughts about Ahsoka? Because I haven't actually listened to your episodes yet. I like to listen once we've done recording here, so I'll go and listen afterwards.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just want to hear about what your thoughts were at the time that the episode released. And then has that opinion changed now that some time has passed?
Yeah, Cheryl and I like to say that the Ahsoka show was kind of made for us specifically. It's mm-hmm. kind of everything we love about Star Wars rolled into one TV show.
Right.
So yeah. I think immediately I kind of loved it. I think I was really nervous about it before it came out. We've already seen Rosario as Ahsoka, and I really liked her portrayal, but I think I was so nervous about seeing like Sabine, and you know, at the time wasn't quite sure how Ezra would be involved. And then I was really nervous about Hera's portrayal. I think that was the one that I was really kind of, am I going to like this? Is it going to live up to what we've seen in Rebels and everything like that? So I think I was really nervous going into the show, but still really excited. And I think I didn't want to have super high expectations in case it didn't meet in the ways that I thought it would.
Yeah.
But I was kind of completely blown away by the show, honestly. I loved it as it was airing, and I love it now. I think there were definitely some elements that I'm sure we'll talk about with, you know, especially in the last episode, how they left things for the season that mm-hmm. I really kind of had to work through personally. But like when it came to Ahsoka and Sabine staying on Peridia, that was a really big pill for me to swallow, not gonna lie.
All right.
So I really had to work through that. And honestly, we talked a lot about it on the podcast. Charlotte kind of had to talk me off the edge of a cliff about it because I was really sad that they stayed there. But I think now, you know, a couple weeks, months, however long it's been, it's like, okay, I can really see the value in that kind of ending to the series or to the season, not series. Let's be super clear. That's what I'm manifesting. So I think overall I loved it while it was airing, and I still really freaking love it.
I second all that again. Like,
yeah,
you know, for me, when the series came out, you know, I second all that, like, you know, the like anxiety almost when a new Star Wars project comes out, because you're like, wow, everything I knew beforehand is now gonna change after tonight or after this viewing of it, right? Everything that I knew before will have different context to it and different ideology and meaning behind it potentially. I think was it maybe Parks and Rec in one episode where Ben Wyatt was like getting a massage and like, what are you so stressed about? And he's like, well, the new Star Wars movie's coming out. And I like relate to that so hard. I've never felt so more seen in an entire anything ever. So like once this show came out, and I think like this is kind of almost the benefit of talking about it months afterwards in a way, like when I watched one episode, sometimes I would just have to sit there. And I think I literally just sat in silence for a few, like, you know, hours maybe after one of the episodes came out. And I was just like, I don't know what to think yet. And then I'd watch it again, maybe, or, a third time perhaps. And then I'd be like, okay, now it's starting to click. And then now that some time had passed and then revisiting for these conversations that we're doing here for the podcast, I've been like, wow, this is just magnificent. It just really, the theme set in, and the once especially you know the full story, right? You're not surprised. The week to week sometimes can hinder the enjoyment, or you're focusing too much on something else and you're just like, all right, that would have bothered me when the series was like in episode one or two or something like that. But when you're like really thinking about the grand scale of things, about like, all right, it really sets up what happens in episode eight so well, or the payoff is right there, and all I had to do was just be patient. It's just like, man, this series just blows your mind when you think about it and all the possibilities that it could mean for future Star Wars projects. I found it so interesting what you said about Hera too being one of the big concerns that you had going into the series. And when we watched the series, we watched it with my brother and sister-in-law, one of their biggest complaints heading into it was just the character of Hera overall. And they were like, you know, I think my sister-in-law was like, you know, Hera can be a wet blanket sometimes. She's always the mom just telling the kids what not to do and to stay out of trouble and all that stuff. And I want to get your thoughts on that so we can go off script a little bit here. But like, I always, this series, I always felt like every time Hera came on screen, I felt like she went against that and she was her own person and fighting and like showing that she's just more than just a mom. She's there for everybody and she's the mom of the galaxy. Is that
the mom of the galaxy?
The mom of the galaxy, yeah. how did you feel about Mary Elizabeth Winstead's portrayal and just how the character was in live action for the first time?
I thought she was great. And like I said, I was probably the most nervous about her portrayal. And I think that that's just something that kind of comes with, as we're like seeing these characters in live action for the first time. It's just, it's an adjustment, honestly, to see them with a different voice, to see them with a different look. Like even when you talk about moving Ahsoka from Clone Wars into Rebels, like part of the shock value of that is just seeing her in a different style and getting used to like, oh, this is how she looks in Rebels. This is how she looks however many years later she was in Rebels versus Clone Wars. And I think that's a big part of like moving characters like our Rebels crew into live action too. But I think Vanessa Marshall has such a presence in both, I think, like her life in the community with Star Wars fans, but then also in the show. And she's so great in that role. Yeah. You know, I think there's such like warmth and there's also a lot of like authority in her voice too, as like a rebel leader and stuff, that it was really hard for me to picture how it would translate with someone completely different in live action. But I thought Mary Elizabeth Winstead did such a great job, and I really loved this iteration of Hera where people were kind of pushing back on her a little bit as far as like with going after Ezra and all of that. And you could really see that even though, yes, she was concerned about obviously Thrawn coming back and, you know, all the implications of that, what they were telling her, Senator Ziona, it wasn't false about her like wanting to go after Ezra, kind of wasting, I guess, like tax dollars on going after Ezra. Right? Like that is all kind of true too. And you can see that that's really where her heart is. And I think that, you know, in Rebels, she was always the person that was pushing for involvement in the rebellion. That was always kind of her flag to bear, I think, in that group. Of course, not that she didn't care what the rest of the crew was going for, but that was her role, I think, and was bringing them into the rebellion and kind of, that was her flag to bear. And I think kind of seeing not her priority shift in Ahsoka, but just to see almost more of that motherly side of putting everyone else as number one priority. I don't know. I thought it was really great. And I was kind of sad she didn't get to go to Peridia as well, but I thought her role was great. And I really, really hope we see more of her.
I hope we get to see a lot more of her too. And if anything about the ending of this season, you know, I have a full faith and confidence that we'll get a lot more Hera and a future story, maybe Mando season 4, perhaps she'll be more involved.
Something, anything.
Come on, more Hera in anything. Yeah. Animated, live action, book story. Let's get into it. Yeah. Well, let's get into episode 8 here. And the episode is titled The Jedi, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. The Wardrobe, yeah, I already spoiled my question here. The Jedi, the Witch, and the Warlord, which, you know, to me is obviously a clear reference to the Chronicles of Narnia. And in the Skytalkers episodes discussing Ahsoka, I know that you and Charlotte have talked at length about the C.S. Lewis references and inspiration in the series, and just in general, Filoni's work. So first, how was your reaction to seeing that title? And second, why do you think that the Chronicles of Narnia remains such a major influence in Star Wars storytelling today?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, my first reaction was complete like hysteria. Because we have been talking about it a lot to the point where I wrote in our show notes, sorry, I keep bringing up Narnia before this.
Never apologize for bringing up Narnia.
Right, yeah. And so Charlotte and I, like, we turned it on at the same time, right? But we're obviously not in the same place, so our phones are always on Do Not Disturb. Mm-hmm. But when I saw the title, we both immediately texted each other, like, oh my God. It felt like, I don't know, it felt crazy. Because sometimes, I mean, I don't know, there's not always these direct references, like so direct, or I guess I don't always expect them. I say that, but there are a lot of direct references, obviously, in Star Wars. But I don't know, it just felt, I was so excited because we really had talked about it so much, like an annoying amount.
No, I loved all the references and the talk about it. I was saying more, give me more.
Right? Yeah. But I think about why it keeps coming up is, I don't know, I think that's something that Dave Filoni has referenced a lot. And I think if if a big part of the inspiration for The World Between Worlds was Narnia and the wood between the wood that we see in The Magician's Nephew from C.S. Lewis, then it makes sense that he would continue that influence with The World Between Worlds being such a big part of Ahsoka's journey in the show. And I think, you know, there's a lot of Tolkien and like Lord of the Rings in Ahsoka as well. And I'll be honest, I haven't read Lord of the Rings, so that's more of Charlotte's area of expertise. It's definitely on my to-do list, I promise. But it, for some reason, it hasn't happened yet. But I think that there's such a big, true fairy tale. You know what I mean? It's not Star Wars. It's like, you know, in the woods, over the hill to grandmother's house kind of vibe. It feels like a different type of tone, I think, than sometimes we see in Star Wars. And right. You could really tell that I think that's what Dave Filoni wanted to bring into this show. And so I think that also just ties in perfectly with Narnia and with Lord of the Rings, that adventure in a new world. And there's just something about it that feels, you can kind of instantly grasp onto that tone, and now to see it kind of fully realized with Star Wars, I think is so cool. And that we're on this planet where it's, you know, maybe the beginning of the Force or just another version of the Force. And there are these wolves and there are these people that are already there, and it's completely removed from the rest of the galaxy. I don't know. There's something really cool about that, and very, very fairy tale. And Why wouldn't you bring in kind of such great fairy tales like Narnia and Lord of the Rings? It makes perfect sense.
Right. Did you feel like vindication when you saw that title? Are you like fist pumping? Yes,
a little, yeah.
I was right. I wasn't going off on a wild goose chase. This was real.
Yeah. A little, yeah. I can't lie. It felt like good vindication.
I love what you said there about it just being like, let's embrace the fairy tale of it all. Let's embrace this. Like, I feel like Lucas was always, you know, he wasn't afraid to like wear on his shoulders the influences of the original Star Wars films, Flash Gordon, the adventure serials, the science fiction films that inspired him, right? All that stuff, you put it, Seven Samurai, you throw it into a melting pot, and there you get Star Wars out on the other side, right? So I just love that Filoni, as a disciple of Lucas in a way, is almost taking that in stride and saying like, yeah, here's something that inspired me. Maybe it tells other people to go read those stories too, and then to maybe even watch those movies too, and then, you know, create their own stories or find it in a way to influence their lives too, which I have always found to be so cool. And I'm glad that you all have made that connection over your episodes as well.
Yeah. I really liked how you said that about wearing his influences on his shoulders. I think that's a really good way to put it, because they've never shied away from that. And it is cool that if you are a fan of Star Wars and you really like want to start looking, like really analyzing it and really like getting in the weeds with it, then it can lead you down this trail of a lot of other really amazing stories and filmmakers and authors and stuff like that. And, you know, it's an opportunity. Like, I don't know if I would have ever watched Seven Samurai or something like that if I hadn't been into Star Wars, honestly. And so just even having the opportunity to learn about it, I think, is really great. And then to see kind of how these influences change over the years too, you know, from George Lucas to Dave Filoni, and even now our filmmakers who were students of Star Wars, you know, that they're now making films and Star Wars films too. It's cool.
Totally. I think I don't remember if it was Favreau maybe or Filoni in one of the many interviews that they've done over the years where they're like, you know, maybe it was even with Lucas himself. I can't remember, so I apologize for not being able to attribute the quote properly. But I think they said something to the extent one time of like, you know, don't watch Star Wars to be inspired to like create new Star Wars, right? Watch the influences that created Star Wars and then create your own Star Wars based off of that. So I feel like in a way this is Filoni telling people, this was an inspiration for me, for sure. Go check out that other stuff too, and it's cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
Yeah, it got the Filoni seal of approval.
Yeah, exactly.
So Morgan Elsbeth basically becomes a full-fledged knight of the Night Sisters in this episode. She's bestowed the Blade of Talzin, which visually looks pretty cool. What do you think its inclusion does for the mythology of Star Wars? Or was it just a cool addition, knowing what really happens in the final duel between Ahsoka and Morgan?
Yeah, I think that was one of the things I was really kind of bummed about, is the fact that Morgan died at the end. And I kind of think she's dead with a capital T. Because I thought the inclusion of the sword was so cool. It felt a lot like the reveal of the Darksaber in The Mandalorian.
Yes.
Of that shock. You remember that shock of seeing the Darksaber in action for the first time? Like, whoa, they're doing that. They're going there. That's what it felt like to see the Mother Talzin's sword. And I was like, wow. And the whole transformation of her into a full Dathomiri witch, I guess, was just so incredible that I still am kind of bummed that she died. It was like, we had like this 10-minute sequence and it was amazing. I was like really here for all of it. And then she's gone. So I'm still kind of sad about that. So I think it would be interesting to see if the sword comes back at all, actually, if it is something that can kind of continue on, because now that I'm thinking about it, I actually don't know if we saw it again at the end of the episode. I know that Ahsoka cuts her with it and with her lightsaber too. So where is it?
Where did it go?
Yeah, I'm like just now kind of thinking about this.
You're right. I didn't even think through that. Oh my God.
So that could be actually a really interesting plot point now that we're talking about this, of the sword and how it actually could become more part of the mythology of this place, especially if the Dathomiri are from this planet. Then would the sword stay there, or would it go back to Dathomir in the regular galaxy? I don't know. I'm kind of envisioning Shin with it now in a weird way.
Ooh.
So yeah, I actually don't know the answer to your question, but I think there's good speculation here.
I was actually imagining, as you were talking through it, like just like Sabine picking it up and then going down that path, because, you know, she did spend time on Dathomir and was kind of possessed in Rebels there. And had time with the Darksaber too, which is kind of similar to that regard. Ooh, this opened up a whole can of worms I wasn't expecting to go down. Wow.
Yeah, well, especially because we know that Ahsoka was worried about Sabine turning to the dark side or had something. I forget what the exact quote was, but Ahsoka was worried about Sabine, I guess, and her tendencies, her Mandalorian tendencies. So I wonder if it could become like a temptation or something. Because you're right. She got possessed on Dathomir. So I wonder if the sword would even know her. You know what I mean?
What if like the Great Mother can like still influence it from afar? I mean.
Yeah.
Wow. The possibilities are endless. I mean.
Yeah,
I think I shared your same sentiment of being bummed about it, because its reveal is so cool. It does have that Darksaber. Yeah. I was thinking like a Night Sister Excalibur in a way, like this weapon that is meant to be their salvation, right? And then to have her cut down, I was just like, no, she was so cool and great, like so fun to have her in this series, and like just, you know, going back to The Mandalorian too with her inclusion in that, and to seeing her get this like bigger role in this because of that. And then now that we're talking about it, because I feel like nothing is just a throwaway with Filoni.
Mm-hmm.
We all probably thought, well, are space whales or, you know, star whales ever going to be a thing?
Star whales.
You know, like, or, you know, like all that stuff. And then eventually we're now years later, we're riding star whales all the way out to this land where Ezra and Thrawn are at. So they have somehow seemingly become some of the most important things in the lore of Star Wars. So perhaps there is a bright future ahead for this blade of Talzin. Just so cool to hear the name Talzin too, in a live action sense too. I mean, like the Clone Wars kid in me is just like, whoa.
Right?
Let's do it again.
It does feel like, where is it now? So yeah, it's got to come back, right?
I'm going to have to like rewatch it just to like deliberately pinpoint what happens to it.
Like, it didn't like disappear or anything, right?
It's exactly. Great. It didn't like fly into dust or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think it did. So I don't know. I think we need to keep this in our back pocket.
These are the real details that we need to pick up on for a potential season two. We'll start a new like Twitter trend. Where is the blade of Talzin? Well, that's great. So let's get to the next question here then. Ahsoka has a pretty clear heart-to-heart conversation with Sabine in the episode, kind of accepting her for her choices and really supporting her, in my opinion. So has she come full circle, I guess both of them, Ahsoka and Sabine, in their relationship from when the season started?
I think that's a really good question. And I think it's something that I think it depends on if there is a second season or not. I think that if this is all there is, then I think, they've come full circle. We've left them in a, you know, a place where they're at peace on Peridia. Yeah. I think you can very clearly read that in their expressions. And I think the conversation they had on their ship, like before they stormed the castle, right? Mm-hmm. I think that conversation is really like where they kind of close that loop of like, I'm here for you now. I'm ready to be your master and I'm ready to be your apprentice and all of that. So yeah, I do think they had kind of a full circle moment within the season, but I think there's still a lot that's kind of not been worked through fully that I think could be explored or would hopefully be explored in a second season. So like we were talking about everything of, Ahsoka thinking that she sensed something in Sabine, whether it was mm-hmm. darkness or whatever it was, I think that could still be resolved probably, especially if Sabine gets, you know, mother to the blade of Talzin.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a lot to work through. And then I think, you know, Ahsoka has done a lot as far as, I guess, deconstructing her relationship with Anakin, but mm-hmm. I'm sure that that could come, like, nothing is ever fully resolved, I guess, when it comes to emotions like that. Or at least I hope they're not in stories where we get to see characters for a long breadth of time. Like Ahsoka, yeah, she went through something and she's like reached a point of peace with Anakin, of course. But what's to say that's not going to come back up again in the future, right? Or something new will happen, or, you know, so I think that there's still a lot that could be done with their relationship. And I think that a big part of this season was just kind of, because they spent a lot of it apart, honestly, even mm-hmm. though the show is kind of about them. And so I hope that now that they're kind of stuck here in the next season, that they would really be able to work through some of those things and kind of, I guess, dig a little bit deeper. I mean, there's still like, we still haven't heard of Sabine talk at all about how her whole family was killed on Mandalore,
yeah.
and all of that. Like, there's a lot of really sad stuff that's happened to both of them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Yeah, I hope we get to see that explored with them in a new season.
Yeah, there's so much more to unpack still. And you're right. And yeah. now that they are stranded on Peridia, they've got a lot of time to sit and have some yeah. campfire conversations, if
exactly.
you will.
Yeah.
And I think this is a great first step, right? Mm-hmm. I think that for so long, like, Ahsoka was, in my opinion, stagnant, of course, the lot of this season. Focusing first off on what was harboring her back from really being a great mentor and teacher to Sabine, which was she hadn't resolved her own trauma and
yeah.
processing of dealing with her own master apprentice relationship. So how could she be a good master to her apprentice if she
yeah.
hadn't fully processed or made sense of what happened to her and she's still harboring something about that? So she's like, great, I've now kind of been more at peace with that than ever before. And now what did I learn from that? Well, Anakin always was there to support me throughout all the Clone Wars, throughout all of the mistakes that I made, the wacky stuff, he was what I needed him to be at the time. And maybe thankfully for Huang too, being a great voice of reason every now and then for her,
yeah.
You know, she's come to this point, in my opinion, where she's like, you know, I may not fully agree with everything that you did, or you may not have had like the full training that I wanted you to have at this point, but you made a choice and I'm going to support you through it. Right. That's the thing
yeah.
about that true friends and people that care about each other will ultimately do for one another is that we are mm-hmm. there to support each other during our highs and especially our lows and, you know, all that middle ground in between. Right. So like,
yeah.
you know, this is exactly, in my opinion, what I think what Sabine had always wanted to hear from Ahsoka, that she was being supported rather than being like, you know, you need to focus more, you need to be more disciplined and trained, the stuff that every
yeah.
student always wants to hear from from a master,
right.
From a teacher relationship especially, you know, rather than just being the support of it all, right, where they're
mm-hmm.
like, you know, I'm going to support you through this. You're going to have some trials and tribulations. You're going to stumble, you're going to fall, but I'm going to be here to pick you back up again. And even beyond the grave, Anakin's there to help her with that. So it's time for
yeah.
her to help Sabine in that case. So I think I'm very excited for the prospects again of a season two where Ahsoka gets to kind of sit and then be the listener to Sabine and being like, you left
mm-hmm.
me when I needed you. You need to, now you're coming back with all this. And I'm ready for that conversation already.
To have our own come to Jesus.
Yes, exactly.
This conversation.
Flip the
yeah.
switch on the other side.
Yeah, I think that there's always, I think the Ahsoka show did something interesting, and like, right, the Jedi, and I think Dave and George always talk a lot about how for Jedi it's a choice between a selfless choice or a selfish choice. And they're always kind of using those terms, I think. And I think that Dave really brought that into the Ahsoka show about with Sabine and Ezra, and then Ahsoka kind of judging Sabine's choices about it. And then, like you mentioned, Hugh Yang being there to be like, what does he say? It's like, well, maybe for her it was the only choice.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's kind of a contradiction in and of itself, because a choice implies that you have two options, and Hugh Yang is like, not for her. And I think it really kind of toyed with our feelings about a selfless versus a selfish choice, and that it's not always clear cut, and that sometimes there really isn't a fully right or wrong answer, right? Because for Ahsoka, like, leaving Ezra on Peridia meant also leaving Thrawn. And we know where all of that's going to lead, right? The First Order, like, this all has to be tied in, right? So it's not a wrong choice for her to want to close that door completely. But then for Sabine, it's also not a wrong choice to go after Ezra. And I think them kind of realizing that together, or rather Ahsoka kind of realizing that about Sabine, I think was part of her journey of coming back to the table as her master. Yeah.
Agreed. I also think too, almost to kind of help understand the Sabine of it all and her choice, you know, like, I feel like it's almost like we could almost unfairly put all the blame on her in a way, like a Star-Lord kind of from Infinity War, where we're like, boy, if he had only just held out for a few seconds longer on taking out Thanos, then maybe this whole thing wouldn't have happened, you know. But it's like, in my opinion, like, there's no ultimate guarantee that Thrawn does return if they get there. Like, they don't know exactly what is there. Right.
Yeah.
They don't know if there's a return trip back. They don't know. I guess, in my opinion, in her mind, she's like, is there enough hyperfuel out there? Maybe we can stop them. Perhaps. Maybe she has the hubris of saying, like, well, if I get up there and I find Ezra and we can gang together, and the two of us with our strength, right, we can defeat potentially this Empire group out there and stop Thrawn from coming back too. And I have it all. Right. But I have to get out there first to have this chance to even see that possible. And maybe it's a fear choice to even say, like, it's better just to cut this thing, you know, to not go, to not have anybody go, and then to leave Ezra stranded out there, rather than, I don't know what the future even holds, it's always in motion. So maybe that's just a empathetic look at Sabine, knowing what happens throughout the rest of the episode. But especially, this is the benefit of the time since the series, where as soon as, like, she gave the orb back to Baylan and all that, and they left, and
like,
Sabine, how could you? Imagine telling Ezra what you've done, all this that he sacrificed for, and she's always avoiding that conversation these last couple of episodes.
Yeah.
And, like, is she just afraid of how he'll react to it? I don't know, maybe, probably. He probably wouldn't. I think so.
But, see, I was with Sabine the whole time. I was like, don't listen to Ahsoka. Okay. You gotta go for
Ezra. You gotta go. You gotta do it. You gotta do it.
Gotta go.
It's not called Star Peace. You gotta get out there.
Yeah. It's like, no, go. We need Ezra. You have to go. So I was really shocked, actually, when she made that choice at the end of episode 4, is it? That whole sequence, actually, where she kind of goes with Baylan, and I thought it was a really well done sequence. But yeah, the whole time I was like, Ezra, Sabine.
They didn't just cast Iman Asfandi without, you know, having a plan to be in him, aside from this the Ezra hologram from the Rebels, right?
Yeah,
he was destined to be in the show.
he's perfect. So
he really
we
is,
also need more of him. It's like, I think they are all great portrayals, but I think he's probably the best one-to-one. There's something about him that just imbues Ezra. Like, he oozes Ezra for sure.
The vibes, so the great mannerisms, it's all 100% Ezra.
I love it.
Well, there's a lot of bonkers things over the course of this season, particularly this episode, but this episode made canon what many in the fandom have always dreamed about, which are stormtrooper zombies, aka night troopers. How do you think they were handled within this episode, and what could it mean for the future of Star Wars storytelling?
Well, I think the whole Storm the Castle sequence, there were times where it felt a little too video gamey for me. I'll be honest there. So I'm never one to honestly pay that much attention to stormtroopers, but I think their design was, number one, really, really cool. And I think the concept of a zombie stormtrooper is, again, just feels so, like, wild in a lot of ways. Like, even though I know we've seen, like, zombie Dathomir witches, like,
yeah.
I've already swallowed that pill. Why can't there be zombie stormtroopers, too? But every time something, like, brand new like this comes into Star Wars, I think I said this earlier, it is kind of like an adjustment of, like, oh, okay, I guess this is part of the Star Wars universe now. It doesn't have to be new and weird. The whole thing is new and weird. I mean, there are literally star whales just hopping around different galaxies whenever they want. Like, who knows what else is out there, right? But I think it ties in really nicely, honestly, to the Dathomir and kind of what we know about the Great Mothers, the Mother Talzin, and what she's done and what we've seen from there. So I think it's good connectivity, honestly, with what we've seen of Dathomir and that whole storyline in the Clone Wars. So I wonder if there'll be connectivity there. But I do like the idea of this kind of a little bit of that horror element within Star Wars of, you know, you can cut them down, but they're just going to get back up. And it was fun to kind of see how the crew would kind of work around that. But I liked them. I'm excited to see what's next for them. And we have all I don't really know if we know what it is, but the boxes, the coffins that Thrawn took back to the other galaxy, I assume. I feel like it's more zombies, but I don't know.
Hey, you never know. Wouldn't that be so cool to see, like, the army, whatever Republic army they want to call it together, whether it be, you know, if Luke is a part of it, if Din Djarin, can you imagine Din Djarin going up against a bunch of zombies, night troopers? Like,
he would.
How
he
could
would,
his mind even comprehend?
I don't think he would know what to do.
Like, just get the little one out of here. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. I think it would really throw him.
It really would. I think that's a good point there. Is maybe that's how they create, like, a grander army of, like, maybe that's their plan, is to, like, resurrect some of, like, the fallen stormtroopers and all that. Yeah. And that's how they create some sort of, you know, shadow army, if you will, for this shadow empire that they're forming out on Dathomir. And maybe.
Yeah. Like, I always wonder, too, if it's something that will eventually tie to, like, Exegol, because there's all the...
Oh, yes. That's a good call.
The people, I think they have official names, like, the people in that arena who are watching everything happen with Palpatine and Rey and Ben. I think they're, like, Sith worshippers or something. I wonder if they would, like redo that, essentially, or kind of change it to be... I don't know. I just think there's... Exegol has a lot of undead things on it too, so I wonder if there'll be that connectivity there eventually. Like, you know, I feel like you could probably do something with that. So I don't know. And we know that Thrawn brought back the Great Mother, so he's obviously still using them for their power, and that clearly it's something important to him, and it feels like that kind of army of the undead would be a really interesting route to see in Star Wars kind of explored more.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, they handled it in a way that it didn't feel so hokey. Like, there's definitely a timeline where I'm just like, oh, now zombies. Where I kind of have that pessimistic outlook on things, but I'm not at the end of the day here. I'm like, ooh, that's cool. Let's see where that could go. I think I'm more open to the possibilities. And I actually really liked what you said there. I didn't even think about that, of them, like, this, it's a whole storming the castle sequence, like adding more to this fairy tale sense. And now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, man, I got some real Willow vibes thinking about this whole sequence.
It even kind of looks like it could be in Willow a little bit too.
Yeah, I'm like, is this Nokmar? Maybe. Ooh. Again, another reason to rewatch, because I feel like I'm getting a whole new like prism by which to view these through, which is really cool.
yeah.
So this season concludes, and I'm saying this season because I'm hoping that more seasons come. We've already come to the conclusion that there must be more. concludes with a variety of different paths. Thrawn and Ezra are heading back to the main galaxy of Star Wars, whatever that may be, the far, far away galaxy, with Ezra reconnecting with Hera at the end. Ahsoka, Sabine, and Hu Yang are seemingly trapped on Peridia. Shin is left with the bandits on Peridia, and Baylan can be seen atop a statue which looks like the father from the Mortis Arc. So the big questions here then are, where do you think each of these characters go from here? Which is a lot.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, that is a big question. Where do they go? I honestly have no idea. My dream was that this season would end with all of them on the Ghost and that like Hera would have been kicked out of the Resistance or the New Republic, but they would know that Thrawn is back and that they would be the beginning of the Resistance, that they would be like kind of the first Resistance cell. I was like, this is perfect. It's a happy ending, but it's not like, you know, Thrawn is still there, right? Like, we know what we're going to do next season. And that absolutely did not happen.
Quite the contrary.
Not at all. Yeah. And again, I really had to work through my feelings on the ending because I was just so sad for them to be separated again from Ezra and everything else. But I think that it was a really smart and a really bold decision to, like, Charlotte actually was the one that put this in my head, so I won't take credit for it. But she was like, it's really bold that, like, they just took Ahsoka out of the story of, like, who knows, like, maybe the sequel trilogy, but kind of everything leading up to the sequel trilogy, it feels like, at least for the time being. Because it is a question, you know, whenever we're watching any other story now in this period, it's like, oh, well, where's Luke? Where's Leia? Where's Ahsoka? Why aren't they doing XYZ? And now it's like, well, Ahsoka's literally in a different galaxy. She cannot come home.
Yeah.
She is doing other stuff. So it really feels okay. I'll say what I really hope is that on Peridia in the next season, that it really is just a lot of weird Force stuff.
Yes.
And that it really even dives into that fairy tale feeling even more. And you brought up the Mortis gods, like Balin on Father's Hand. It really feels like that is the route that they're going to go. Again, that's what I hope the route is that they're going to go, because I think that there's such Dave keeps kind of talking about it, I feel like, in all of his stories about the Force and like the essence of it, when we have the Mortis trilogy and then we have the World Between Worlds and then we see it again. You know, it's the theme that he keeps coming back to, and even in Rebels to have something like the Bendu or the Lothwolves and all of that, kind of this essence of what the Force is and how it can be explored in different ways. And I think the Mortis gods have always been a really good example of like a fairy tale, an origin story, a myth within Star Wars that has kind of like actual figures, you know, as opposed to the Force, which is kind of nebulous, but to have it contained within like a Father, Son, Holy Spirit and like gods and goddesses kind of vibe, I think is something really cool for Star Wars to do. And I think that it would be really great to explore that more. And we've seen that in the Mortis trilogy, Ahsoka kind of takes on the role of daughter. And, you know, at the end of the Ahsoka series, we don't see the daughter statue. The father and the son are there, but not the daughter. So it just feels so ripe for that to be the conversation going into season two, and that it's not a story about politics, but it's a story about the Force and what it means to be a Jedi and, I don't know, questions like that. And really, I don't know, maybe the origin point of the Force, who knows, or maybe just another iteration of it too that we see on Peridia. And I think that's really exciting. And that's, you know, that's the stuff I love about Star Wars. So that's kind of what I want to see. As far as Hera and Ezra, I have no idea. I just hope we get to see them. I hope we get to see more of Jason Syndulla because I freaking love that kid.
Oh, yeah.
Way more than I ever thought I would. I was obsessed with him. So I would love to see some Ezra and Jason content. It would just, it would be so great to see them happy and together.
Yeah. Those would all be so great. Like, I love everything that you said about the concepts of like Ahsoka and Sabine just having bonkers adventures on Peridia and finding out more about the Force and what their personal relationship is either together and also, but to the Force as well. And I think that, you know, this episode 7 was called Dreams and Madness. Balin called it this land of dreams and madness, and all like Thrawn and the Night Sisters and all of them were like saying this planet is like a hellish landscape in a way. We got to get out of here. Whereas, like, there's more beauty to this planet, in my opinion, than what meets the eye, right? The Na'vi are here, and they're thriving. They're a peaceful folk that are making do. They're wearing, like, sweater vests and all that. The Howler was kind at the end of the day. Like, he was this, like, brutish-looking wolf-like creature that just was, you know, had a heart of gold in a way. Like, this...
He really did.
There's a lot more to this planet than just meets the eye. So I think for them just to go out exploring and perhaps explore neighboring systems if they're able to get the ship working again somehow, like, that would be so cool to just, like, have this fresh canvas that Filoni can say, like, yeah, this is how this works here. This is how this works here. This is, these are the people that live on this planet. This is where I can get so wacky in terms of the space opera of this this thing and create new creatures. The force works opposite here, right? Everybody, you know, I don't know. We just let every idea be a good idea and see what happens here. That would be so cool to see overall, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think it'd be really great. And I think, like, for our characters themselves, right, like, a big part of Ahsoka is, like, to go back to Ahsoka and Sabine, there, what Ahsoka was talking to Anakin about in The World Between Worlds was, is war the only thing I'll have to teach my Padawan? And now she's in a situation where she doesn't have to do that. And so I think there will, obviously, I think that danger, the dark side, fill in the blank, will come and be a conflict, right? I'm not saying it's a completely peaceful world, but I think there will be time, obviously, for them to have that time to learn. Like, Ahsoka can teach her things that aren't war, and I think that that is really what she wanted, and I think that that will really nurture their relationship and hopefully be a time to work through some of the things we talked about earlier of their points of conflict that maybe weren't specifically resolved yet in this season. So I think that would be, I think that would be really great, and then for it to become this big adventure, and, like, who knows what that means for Ahsoka since she is the daughter now, you know, like, we've had Morai, we finally see Morai at the end of the season, which I feel like we were all waiting for her all season, and then she finally shows up. And Charlotte also pointed this out too, that seeing Morai there is proof that this is where Ahsoka is supposed to be, that it's kind of like that, I don't know, that reminder that everything is right. And then, you know, the Anakin Force Ghost as well, I think, was that kind of other confirmation. But yeah, I just wanted to get really freaky and weird and do some interesting things when it comes to the Force and have fun with it. And I always like what Dave has to say about things like The World Between Worlds and the Loathwolves, that he doesn't really want to define it for people. So I don't know. I want to see more of that. And, like, the Bendu too is one of my all-time favorites. And he's just so weird. And there's no kind of answer to him. And we've never seen him again. So yeah, who knows what else is out there and what else is out there on this planet. Yeah.
If this is actually this Bendu land, this is that's like
what I would
where
die.
He went that's, to.
That's this is where he went to. You know, he could. He could do that, I'm sure.
Who's stopping him? He's in the middle. He'll find his way there.
Yeah, no, I love that. I would die because I really wanted the Bendu to be in this season, even though I kind of didn't really think it would happen. But yeah, bring him on. Bring the Loathwolves back. Bring the Lothcats too. Bring Merlee. Bring the Mortis gods. Bring it all. And let's just put him in a pot and see what happens.
Let's embrace the weird. That's what I say. Yeah. Let's do it. Like this. This whole thing answers questions, but it creates so many questions at the same time. But it's like, right, it answers the fact of, like, what you said earlier was, like, where is Ahsoka during X amount of time? Like, it explains where she's at all the way almost up through the sequel trilogy, through Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, as long,
like,
as
if she's
want,
not
really.
There, right, she can be there trapped for the next 30, 40 years, and that explains, there's a great answer for that, too. It's like in when Rebels was going on, everyone was saying, well, does Ezra die? Does Kanan have to die? Like, these guys aren't here when Rogue One starts, right? And they, Hera's here, the Chopper's here. There's got to be an answer for where these folks are. And, like, obviously we know what happens to Kanan. And then Ezra goes off to Peridia. Now we got that answer finally. But he was like, he's off in Purgle Town and all that stuff. He's out there. He's somewhere out in the galaxy with Thrawn. Like, that's why they're both not here in the original trilogy. And now that Ezra's back, and we know that he's not there with Luke at the end of, you know, or at The Force Awakens, it's not like it's Luke and Ezra on on Octo.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, now that I ask the question of, like, well, what happens to Ezra during this time? We have definitive answers for some of these players along the way, but now that brings in the Ezra question that we didn't necessarily have before a couple weeks ago. It's like, oh, now he's in play here. There's another Jedi in the mix here. Does he go visit Luke's temple that he's making over there? Does he go off with Jace, try and train Jason a little bit here in the ways of the Force?
Yeah.
Does he join the rebellion and the Republic Defense Force, whatever they want to call it? Is he going toe to toe with Senator Ziono and saying, like, I told you I existed?
Ezra meet Kaz, like, that would be a good pair up, I think, honestly. Yes. I think that Dave has actually done a really good job of kind of, I don't know, for me, it's been a good example of waiting for the story to like resolve itself eventually. And I think I always think about the conversation with Ahsoka and Revenge of the Sith and how, well, she wasn't there. That means she's going to die, mm-hmm. right? That was everyone's thing. But then we actually get season 7 and she was actually in that timeline the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, like season 7 of Clone Wars is overlapping with Revenge of the Sith, and she's technically in Revenge of the Sith if you think about it that way, like with her last, yeah. like we see her, you know what I mean? I just think that I used to treat these things as like they have to butt up against one another sometimes, the stories and how we see them, and there has to be a clear beginning and end for like these big questions of, yeah, like a really good point. What is Ezra doing, you know, as we lead into The Force Awakens and everything before then? But there mm-hmm. is so much overlap and the galaxy is so wide, and it would be fine for Ezra and Luke to meet up and then for him not to be mentioned in The Force Awakens. Like they're going to write a reason for that. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to always be so clear cut. And I think I used to think that it really did need to be quite clear cut like that. But I think mm-hmm. that Ahsoka and Revenge of the Sith was a really, like, that just blew my mind when Anakin and Obi-Wan went to go after Palpatine. And then Obi-Wan talks to Ahsoka about Anakin spying on Palpatine. I was like, oh my God, like, whoa, it blew my mind. So I think I'm like prepared to be patient for the story of like Ezra as a Jedi, as a Force user in the galaxy at this time, and what it may or may not mean for Luke or even like Ben Solo and the new Jedi Temple and all of that. Like, there are so many possibilities for it. And maybe Ezra just wants to like be there for Jason and train him too, you know, and that's where he wants to end it, or that's what his involvement is in the Force.
Could you imagine Ezra meeting a young Ben Solo and just, like, young Ben calling him like Uncle Ezra or something like that? Oh, my heart is melting. It's just the prospects of it.
yeah, that would be really great. Yeah, I would love to see that.
I think especially Filoni, but just the people working behind the scenes have just like earned the trust at this point of, like, from me at least, of where, like, yes, there's the question of now Ezra is in play here during this time. But like you said, the way they handled Rebels, the way they handled the questions of Ahsoka during the Clone Wars, the trust is there. They're going to find an answer that is satisfying to everybody that goes, there was no need to worry anymore. So
yeah,
I think I'm in that place where I'm just serene. I'm just letting the story play out as they want to share it with me, and then I'll react as I do. Mm-hmm. Very Zen Jedi-like.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of people nice without... To... Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, there's something nice too about kind of knowing that these questions are... They don't have to be answered right away,
yes.
Like Ezra and Luke, that we can come back to it in 5 years and see then, or maybe it's just something we all get to speculate about, you know, for a really long time. And that's a lot of fun too.
Totally. I mean, it took us 5 years to get an answer to where Ezra and Thrawn were at.
Exactly.
So like, we can be patient as a fandom. I mean, it took what, 12? Not 12 years. It's like 15 years between, you know, Return of the Jedi and Phantom Menace. So like we can wait. Fandom can be more patient than we lead on to be. I think we're just in an era of just so much all at once. That we're like, we need answers now. But yeah, we can wait. We can wait for sure. And, you know, speaking of lack of trust, the whole Baylan Skull of it all. I mean, that guy is just, he's on a mission. And like, rest in peace, Ray Stevenson. What a great performance he brought to that role. And just like, man, the anti-Ahsoka in a way. Like the mm-hmm. two sides of the same coin. These Ronin that are out in the galaxy without a overarching organization behind them, and then taking on these apprentices that have complicated relationships with them. And the whole Mortis thing of it all. I mean, just like, I had to rewind. I had to pause just to confirm that my eyes weren't like deceiving me at that late at night. I'm like, I know it's like 10 o'clock, but like, geez,
that was
a rock
Mortis
statue, right?
It
couldn't be more than that. Nope. Turns out, as you said, the daughter statue's gone. The son's over here. The father's there, and he's looking out in the distance. I'm like, well, what's in the distance there? It's just, man, the tip of the iceberg storytelling of this all is just incredible.
It really is, and it's so sad that Ray passed away because he gave such an incredible performance, and that character is so great. And I think Dave had a quote in an interview recently about how much he would have loved, Ray would have loved to see everyone's reaction and like love for Balin. And I hope he would, because I think he was just an incredible part of the season. I think practically, it's definitely a challenge for what they'll do next season, because he did have such an interesting storyline. And it's one thing I do think that the season could have done better is kind of bringing more of Balin's goal earlier on in this season, because I feel like there were still so many questions about what he ultimately wanted. And he talked a lot in riddles, I think, which I love. I ate up a lot of
Oh,
his
yeah.
monologues. I thought they were great, but there weren't many answers in them either. It was very kind of lofty, nebulous, which was very great and very interesting. But I do think that, that's left a lot of question marks. And now, of course, things are going to have to be reworked, unfortunately. So it will be really interesting to see what they do if Shin kind of ends up taking up that mantle, or if they end up doing something completely different with it. They could. But yeah, I thought he was so interesting. And like you said, like kind of like the anti-Ahsoka. But I think with characters like that, there is such a thin line that separates them. And they both live through Order 66. And then the directions that they went from this traumatic event were so different. But I loved Balin. I loved what he had to say in Dreams and Madness when he was talking about breaking the cycle and going back to the beginning. And I think that too is kind of our conversation about what happens next season of if he thinks this is the beginning, what does that really mean? And I don't know, like to stop the cycle, you have to go back to square one and kind of redo it all, So I think he was definitely up to something way bigger than I think anyone on Peridia is really aware of. So how that all comes to fruition the next time we see them is going to be really cool. And yeah, I really great.
Yeah, I love that he got like vindicated in a way of like these are the places of story tales and fairy tales, and the fact that it exists just like confirms that there's truth in those legends, right? We've been reading a lot in this in our house, The High Republic, and I'm just on phase three now, but my wife is still in phase two, and we're talking about like how like the leveler and the name, like all that could be like already become legend and all that stuff, even just by the time that phase one rolls around. And there's like, man, how quickly something becomes legend after like someone visibly saw the so many Jedi see the leveler in front of them, and then they live to tell the tale, and then just like no one they know about it, no one does anything, and then it just becomes like fairy tales and myths along the way. And I'm just like, how many of things that they were taught in the Jedi Temple back in the day that he heard about and were just like brushed off as like simple children fairy tales and myth stories and scary tales and stuff like that were actually true and originate from this planet, and we get to see them, whether it be Ahsoka or maybe Balin, kind of going on this hunt to find the real power that exists out there. I mean, it could just be Mortis. Maybe they were taught like a similar fairy tale to Mortis, about the maybe the origins of the Force or the concept of the Force. It's going to be explained a bit further in this, and he's like, this is where I can break the cycle and restart anew, or just like let it end, let the past die, as Kylo would once say.
Yeah, there are so many possibilities. It's going to be really fun to see what they unpack next season, manifesting
Manifesting next season. Let's, you
it.
know, a great holiday gift would be an announcement for Ahsoka season two.
Right?
So,
Merry Christmas.
Lucasfilm, if you're listening, So we haven't even talked upon the big, reveal in a way at the end of this episode, which we see a familiar face at the end, and it's none other than Force Ghost Anakin Skywalker. How did you react to seeing that scene all those months ago? And I guess my final question for you here is, has Anakin finished Ahsoka's training?
Oh, that's a really good question. I, of course, freaked out. I think I freaked out every single time I saw Hayden Christensen as Anakin. We got so much of him in this series, way more than I would have ever thought. I think there were definitely a lot of rumors about the World Between Worlds episode. I think I assumed that that would probably be something that happened. I don't follow any leaks or rumors or anything like that. So the fact that I even knew that that was kind of a rumor, you know what I mean? Like, it was talked about a lot because I don't dive into that at all. But we still saw so much of him, way more than I ever expected. And it was great. Knockout performance. But I think seeing him at the end was so important. Like, I think there's a really great conversation the fandom had in the World Between Worlds episode about, was that really Anakin? Was it the Force manifesting as Anakin, a combination of both, something like that, you know? And I think that's still that, I don't think that's anything that will ever be defined for us, honestly. And like I said about Dave, I think he wants to keep it that way. But I think that Anakin at the end, like, that was 100% Anakin. And I think he has finished Ahsoka's training. And I wonder if they'll ever communicate again. I hope they do. But I think that it has, but I think it has been resolved if it needs to be too. And I don't even know if I think Ahsoka saw him. His Force goes there. I think you could interpret it that she didn't. I think that's how I first interpreted it, that she didn't, and it's just Anakin watching over them without them knowing. And I think there's something really pure about that interpretation too. But yeah, I think he has finished her training, and I think that they are at peace now, or that Ahsoka is at peace with what happened to him, the choices that he made, and how it doesn't have to define her anymore, and she can go on to take the good things from him and move on now, because that's all she can do. And she wasn't before. Like you said earlier, she was very stagnant. And now she can finally move forward.
That's an interesting approach that you raised there, where it's like, did she even see him? I didn't even consider that prospect. So I'll have to think on that one, because immediately my mind went to the opposite of, yeah, she sees him out there, but Sabine would have no idea who that is, so she just, you know, didn't need to explain and then go on a further path to explain it.
Well, maybe, and we know that Luke saw the ghost at the end of Return of the Jedi, but I don't think anyone else did, so maybe Ahsoka did see him and Sabine didn't, so there's certainly precedent for that. But I think most people thought that she saw him. I'm not sure why I think that she didn't, but anyway, I still kind of, that's still in the back of my head, that maybe she didn't, and it's still just this, like, she almost doesn't need that confirmation, like, she doesn't, but he's still there anyway.
I like what you said there, like, she knows that he's there even if he doesn't need to see her. I think Filoni kind of said that in an interview, where he's just like, you know, even in real life, if we've lost somebody, you know, they're always there whenever we need them, like, in our hearts. Like, we can just pull from that, and that's always going to be there for us. And it kind of reminds me of in Obi-Wan Kenobi, when he's finally able to see Qui-Gon at the end, and he's like, where have you been? He's like, I've always been here. You just weren't looking, or not, whatever the paraphrase, the sentence was, you weren't looking in the right way, or you couldn't see me.
Exactly. You
know, maybe it shows in this way that Ahsoka has healed that relationship with Anakin that she was harboring. And now she's able, you know, the training is finished. She's accepted her past. She's ready to move forward to her future, whatever that may entail. And now she has, like, she knows that Anakin's out there whenever she needs him. Like, that's so powerful.
It really is. It was, such a nice ending, even though there are still a lot of things left unfinished. But I don't know. I feel a lot better about it now than I did when I first watched it.
Right. I will say too, like, that is one of my favorite scenes, is seeing Hayden Christensen at the end of Return of the Jedi. I've always loved that change, that inclusion of that. And I've always understood the George's reasoning for doing that. And aside from that, I've always told, like, in my defense of that scene to friends, I've always been like, well, you know, this opens the opportunity for, like, Anakin to be in other things if they do something later on. And now here we are 20 years later, I get to actually, like, call upon us. See, I told you, I was right. There was a reason. There was a reason they took out Sebastian Shaw. and it worked for the story too, more so than anything. It wasn't just a cheap gimmick to just throw Anakin in. None of this ever to include Anakin, Hayden Christensen's Anakin, was like an attempt to ploy prequel fans out into the woodwork and, like, you know, get them to watch something that, you know, they weren't, that wasn't,
they might not have
really
yeah.
good or enjoy or something like that. Like, it wasn't just like a cameo attempt or something like that. No, it was super meaningful and impactful to the story overall, whether it be an Obi-Wan Kenobi, whether it be mm-hmm. in these last couple of episodes of Ahsoka, the World Between Worlds sequence, the training sequence, and now this final sequence. Like, it's always been impactful for the story, and but most importantly, it serves the character of Ahsoka, which is the main title character of this. It isn't just like a throwaway thing, yeah. like, hey, here's this for you guys, nibble on that for a little bit. No, it serves the character, which is first and foremost so important to me.
Yeah, it's great because, you know, the Skywalker saga is obviously about the Skywalkers, and Anakin is number one in the prequel trilogy. So it's kind of about his relationship to all of the characters and the other characters and what they mean to him. And then to be able to have the Obi-Wan show and the Ahsoka show and to kind of fully deal with the fallout of what the choices that Anakin made on those people, I think was so great. And to be able to have Hayden Christensen back in that role to like fully dive into that with, you know, what it meant for Obi-Wan and then what it meant for Ahsoka, I think was, we're so lucky, honestly. They were both so well done and we're so lucky to have it.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine just like talking to like the 2008 version of ourselves to be like, yeah, this character in this Clone Wars movie will get a live action show.
No.
15 years from now, and you remember Hayden Christensen in those movies, like he's gonna come back and have like a whole renaissance in Star Wars. I mean, just like, and Ewan McGregor's gonna come back too. Like,
no,
I would have like said, you're wrong, this is crazy, how is this possible?
Same. Yeah. It would seem like a fever dream, which it still does, but yeah,
it still kind of is a fever dream. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Caitlin, we've talked at length about this episode and just Ahsoka overall. Do you have any final thoughts for the audience at this time?
I think Star Wars is good. We're really lucky to have yeah. this show. Yeah, I'm really excited for what is coming next and for season 2 that is coming. Like I said, I'm really looking forward to some weird Force stuff, and I hope we get to see more of it. But thank you so much for having me on, Anthony. This was so much fun.
Absolutely. You're always welcome anytime on the show. And where can the fine folks find you online and Sky Talkers?
Yeah, so I host the Sky Talkers podcast with my best friend, Charlotte, and you can find us on Twitter at Sky Talkers Pod or anywhere you download podcasts, and our website, skytalkers.com. You can find me mostly on Twitter at Caitlin Plesher, sometimes on Instagram, but Twitter or X, I'm sorry, mostly on X.
It's like whatever it's called these days.
X, yeah.
the site formerly known as Twitter. We'll take it all. Mm-hmm, yeah. And for you folks at home, thank you so much for listening to this episode and for joining us on this Ahsoka journey overall. We've gone from CTOS all the way to Peridia, and we've covered all 8 episodes now. So if you missed an episode, go back and check them all out. They're all available now. And we'll be back actually next week to do a full panel discussion wrap up with some of my family members. So we'll chat about how our thoughts on Ahsoka have changed. So get ready for that, folks. And we'll be back in your podcast feed sooner than you know it. May the Force be with you. Take care. Thank you.